Blog Talk Radio.
So hot! So hot!
This is the sound of the 30. Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Entertainment, alongside Greg Isaac and Joseph Erdo. Hi.
I'm too hot to respond. What is it like?
Wait, is that what the girls say? You're too hot to respond? That sounds like a problem. No, think about it. Too hot to respond, so you're on a date, and a girl says, hey, you're hot, and you don't respond?
No, that's the girls. Tell me I'm too hot to respond. They tell me that they are too hot.
Do you eventually respond to them?
Yes, I do.
Okay, there we go. Anyway, how are you, Joseph?
I'm good, but I mean, I don't know what it is today, but tomorrow it's going to be 118.
I heard about something like that.
Yeah.
Will they ground the airplanes? At 121 they did years ago. Well, they grounded at 118.
I don't know. Well, in
what was that? You're too hot to respond.
No, now I've got too much in my head. I was picking
that's
up
what
someone.
I'm saying. Okay.
I was picking up someone from the airport. Yeah, last night.
You were?
Yeah.
So they immediately went back home when they felt how hot it was.
I'm sure that they wanted to but they got here like an hour and a half late because in Illinois the planes were grounded for a while because of all the flooding and stuff. Yeah, so it's hot. They should not let the planes into Phoenix. It's that hot.
Yeah, they might not. I don't know. They did ground the Sky Harbor at 121 degrees.
Yeah.
I bet that was 22 years ago.
You would know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You guys weren't even born yet.
You weren't even living here. But how did you find that out?
I heard it. I saw these T-shirts of... I survive 121 degrees, and I always ask.
As I always say every week, and it is hot outside. It's always hot. Dry. But once it reaches 100, 105, anything above that, from what we experience, to me, it's kind of all the same.
It's
Joseph, is that correct?
I agree. I mean, I think.
105, you cannot tell the difference between 105 and 121?
I can tell the difference, but, I mean, is there a difference between dead and dying?
Yeah. Yeah, when you're breathing, when you're not. Is there a difference between you're too hot to respond and responding?
And getting rejected.
Too cold to respond. See, that would make more sense, right, Craig?
I guess so.
Yeah, if it's really cold.
Okay.
I would go even further. If it's over 100, then I'm just done, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
See, in the 90s, it's fine, but once it reaches 50,
the 60s. The 90s were okay, but the 60s were better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I could tell.
So we got a great show today, don't we?
Yeah, we got a jam-packed show, as usual. In our second hour today, we will talk about a couple of horror movies. We talked about them last week when we had on interviews for them, 100 Bloody Acres and Maniac.
Oh.
But this first hour is all about documentaries.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and sometimes I don't like documentaries, but we have some good ones on today's show.
Yeah, one of them is not Fahrenheit 9/11 because it's not in tonight's show, show.
Right. Today, for our documentaries, we're going to be talking about Hey Bartender, we had on the filmmaker last week, Douglas Tirola. Mm-hmm. And also, we'll also be talking about Dirty Wars. This is a movie about, we'll tell you a little more about it later, but we have some special sound bites from Rick Rowley, who is a filmmaker.
Mm.
And sandwiched in between those two, at around 2:25 our time, we will have on choreographer Allison Orr. She will be joining us to talk about Trash Dance, which will be opening in a couple weeks over at the Film Box.
But you didn't finish that. Allison Orr who?
Allison Orr is her last name.
Oh, okay. O-R-R.
I couldn't think of a joke.
Okay, I know. But it still was pretty clever.
Yeah, so, it should be a great show. And, again, we will review them and we will dive deeper into their subjects, their meanings, their themes, their enrichment value. You know, movies are entertaining, but they're also enriching, even when you sometimes think that they might not be.
And we have a special review of Before Midnight.
Ooh, you saw Before Midnight.
Yes.
I cannot wait to find out.
I think you're going to want to wait to find out.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. Right, Craigman? Greg? I also saw Greg Mann.
I haven't seen it.
Greg Mann.
I saw Greg Mann. I saw that. I'll do
well,
a special review.
In our second hour, our listeners will wait with bated breath.
Julie, what's her name?
Delpy.
She's cute.
Yes, she is. She was even cuter 9 years ago, and she was downright smoking 18 years ago.
Well, was she smoking? Which one was the first one, by the way?
Before Sunrise.
And the second one?
Before Sunset.
Which was the one that he pulled her off the train?
That was the first one, Before Sunset.
I think that's the one I saw. I don't think I saw the other one.
Before Sunset is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I think she's still pretty cute, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying that she's not. I'm just, you know, here we go right back down to the too hot to respond.
Yeah, that's right. And but she responded.
She did.
Not really.
Well.
That was a ripoff. Okay, anyway.
Wow. All right.
You say you're going to give your comments, but then you got to shh.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's quite correct.
Because now, obviously, we know what you're going to say.
You
know?
No, I might surprise everyone.
It might surprise
them. Yeah, Dave is random.
So, okay, random.
So then before any of that, let's talk a little bit about Hey, Bartender.
Yes.
In this, filmmaker Douglas Tirola explores the rebirth of the bartender and the comeback of the cocktail while featuring the world's most renowned bartenders with access to the most exclusive bars in New York. It's screening 5:55 p.m. Sunday, June 30th, and 7:30 p.m. Monday, July 1st, exclusively at the Film Bar. Great place. Some of the films that we'll be talking about today are there. And so we had on Douglas Tirola last week. He told us all about this film, and that was a really interesting conversation that we had. Don't you agree?
I think it was excellent.
Correct, yeah.
Dave, if you remember, you haven't seen the film, but you thought it reminded you sort of Cocktail, which was one of your favorite movies.
Yeah.
From the 80s.
We talked to him about that.
Back when Dave was in his 50s.
Yeah.
No, not 50s.
Yeah. And he had some great comments about Cocktail and about the themes that we'll discuss here in a second. But, you know, unfortunately, I didn't care for this film as much as I wish that I, you know, could have. Great filmmaker. He has some great ideas. But much like a night out at an extremely popular and therefore incredibly crowded nightclub, Hey Bartender comes across as a bit too chaotic. He's got two juxtaposing themes here, and we'll talk about them both. But let me tell you both of those themes, and we'll continue reviewing it here.
Mm-hmm.
But one theme is any aspect of life is capable of being considered an art form, and another theme is the culture of drink endures because it offers so many rewards, above all, the elusive promise of friendship and love. Now, both of those themes are great themes in and of themselves, but they're constantly doing battle in this movie. You know,
right.
Douglas didn't know if he, or I don't want to say that he didn't know. I found it a little bit unfocused. I found that both the themes were competing for attention at all times, and I wish that he would have just picked one of them. My favorite one after seeing the movie, my favorite scenes were the ones where he's, you know, really telling us or showing us that the cocktail is an art form. You know, it shows these slow motion scenes of these bartenders mixing these drinks, and you know, they're kind of like putting on the show. They're on this stage, and that's, you know, that's awesome. It's awesome to see that, you know, especially in slow motion. You know, but the theme of the culture of drink endures. You know, I've never been much of a bar hound or a cocktail guy. You know, I don't go to bars, is what I'm saying. And so I don't really see that aspect of it. And maybe you guys can fill me in. I don't know if you agree with that theme. But I found it a little bit unfocused and a little bit less insightful, that theme. I'm giving it a thumbs down.
Ooh.
I would definitely suggest going out to the Film Bar to see this movie still, though, even though I'm giving it a thumbs down. If you do, you know, if you are into the bar scene, if you are into the cocktails, if you like the movie Cocktail, then yeah, go see this. But you know, as a general rule of thumb, that my thumb is down.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, what he did say, what Douglas did say, the filmmaker, is that when I asked him what are the elements of a good bartender,
yes,
he said making a good drink. However, even better, he said, is that it's a service. And he talked about a sage. There are sages. Knows at any moment in time, knows the needs of each person. He thought that was the key element, which really goes more into, I think, about the promise of friendship and love, because I think that because if someone's that attentive and that aware and is constantly catering to you, that engages the patrons.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was intriguing to me because it was more skill from an awareness standpoint than it is mixing drinks. It sounds like that's what he was saying.
Correct. And, you know, you could read the full interview. It's up on breakradioshow.com. You can also listen to the archive of last week's show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he had a lot of great insight.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot wait to see what this Douglas Tirola does next, because I really like the way that he dove deep into the subject of the cocktail and the bars and the bartenders. And he had a lot of great insights in that interview, telling us that, you know, the music is right, the atmosphere is right. You know, you're the star of the show, and the bartender is kind of just like the co-star. He's the supporting character who's there to support you in this moment that you want to have. And I think that is why a lot of people do like to go to bars, and they like to go to the same bar over and over because they feel like they're a family.
That's right. It's almost like the sitcom Cheers.
Yes.
People sit in the same place, the same personalities. And you're right, they feel a sense of belonging.
Right.
And they're welcome. Like, isn't that how the song goes?
I didn't.
Yeah. Something.
But I'll say this.
Yeah.
I agree with that point. And, you know, you go with a big group to a bar, whether it's a little one or a big one. Let's say you're in New York or Las Vegas, something like that. You still want to also, you know, gain that acceptance from the bartender and form some type of relationship, or at least where you're there getting your drink, and then all of a sudden, next time you go in, you know that they'll know, hey, yeah, you like this one, and
you go, hey,
you know, things to talk about,
yeah.
And so I think it is, to me, it looks interesting, because I like Dave, I love the movie Cocktail and that type of the scene or scenario, so I do want to check it out and see, but it does make a lot of sense, because that's what people talk about a lot. You say, oh, yeah, I go to this bar there because I know Joe, you know, the bartender over there, you know, or Frank or whatever. And so, you know, it is a huge, it could be a huge deal. And so I think, that makes sense, the whole culture of drink endures because it offers so many rewards, as you said.
Yeah.
I can't think of the word to use.
Well, it's also alluring, intoxicating.
What's the tagline?
The social way of communicating.
What? The theme?
Yeah, the theme.
The theme.
There you go. Like I said, I'm like half asleep right now. So.
Well, Pete does that to us, right?
Yeah, allergies.
That's today's theme.
Allergies are killing me today.
Okay. Yeah, really? You got allergies?
Well, can't you tell by my voice?
No.
I'm not snorting anything, so.
Oh, I don't know. That's not baby powder. Okay.
But you.
Maybe it is.
You recall in
Carlos in here.
You recall in the interview last week that Douglas told us that, you know, initially he wanted to make a movie about the bar scene and, you know, that family. But he kind of like pulled away from that and started doing more of the cocktail and the artistic, you know, form cocktail. Because he says that, you know, now we go back from college or something and we see in our hometowns these people have been living there forever.
Absolutely.
And I think that he doesn't show that in this film, but maybe that might have been what held me back a little bit, because I kind of see that, you know, all the time,
right?
You know, in my hometown. I won't say it at this moment. I'll say it some other time, but I don't want to offend anyone. But, you know, people sit there and you think, wow, these people just like do something else. But this movie does make the bar scene seem very active and fun.
Yeah.
And as we'll see here with our next movie, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the next couple weeks with Trash Dance. You know, anything can be considered artistic, you know, an art form. And you would you agree with that? Do you have any comments on that?
No, I think anything and everything, not everything, but yeah, you're right. Things, in fact, people often miss what is art, and they don't understand it, and they're missing a lot of beauty in their life.
Well, I mean, just think of cooking, what Martha Stewart has done with cooking and what Julia Child.
Uh-huh.
And all the there's food, and then there's food that is presented so beautifully, and that's what Douglas Tirola, I think he kind of mentioned that last week as well. you know, with the cocktail.
The presentation.
Right, the presentation, how they're making it,
yeah.
and the things that they put in there, the juices and you know, organic juices, fresh juices, and the way it looks, and the things that they put in the glasses and the different kinds of glasses.
You're right, because that is a big appeal to it. It's not just knowing the bartender, like how the theme is, but just everything that does go on. When you see them doing things, throwing something in the air, kind of like we see in Cocktail, you know, it wows people. But it's also, bartenders are different. You might have a drink of choice. Hey, I love this drink. You go to one bar, you know, one bartender makes it one way. Another might make it stronger or less strong. And then you go, wow, you know, I really like this. And
yeah.
then you realize, hey, this is a drink I like. I'll get it at this place from this bartender. And that's
kind of
what
Shirley Temple is. Shirley Temple everywhere. Really.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Sure.
Yeah. Dave was around during the Shirley Temple film.
yeah.
He was her agent back in the 1930s.
No, who's your daddy? Okay.
Yeah.
I was her daddy. Not really. But she was good. You remember Shirley Temple?
Oh, is there something
yeah.
you haven't told me?
Yes. You have a sister named Shirley. Okay. So
the
thing is,
the old.
No, but I'm going to see this movie. I think it looks pretty good. And primarily because if these people, these bartenders are so good at awareness, to have that type of insight, to pay attention to everyone's needs, that's intriguing to me.
And the one thing with bartending is it's because you have some, a lot of times maybe you're a waiter somewhere. It could be a career, absolutely, or way through college or a part-time job or just something short-term that someone's doing. But again, it could be a career and it's fine. But a lot of people will actually start out and go, that's what I want to be, is an actual bartender.
Oh, really?
You know, not many people will say, want to be a waiter, but people can make a good living off it. But as a bartender, yeah, because they know, hey, if I'm in a high-up type place or working out of a bar in a resort, you know, you can, and especially if you're as talented as some of these bartenders are, they can make a lot of money in any given night. So it's not just more of a job, but it's something that they, plus they enjoy talking to people because it's, he said, you know, like the theme, you know, everyone's always open for conversation with the bartender.
And these cocktail bartenders are very talented, as you'll see in this movie.
Right.
They're, you know, brilliant people. And some of their insights are the psychology of what they do. You know, them talking about the love of what they do and you know, their passion. I mean, it will inflame you and make you very excited, especially if you are into the cocktail scene. So if you do go to bars, if you do like cocktails,
check
if you like drinking, definitely go check it out. I'll tell you the times again. It's screening. It's only two times, this weekend only, screening 5:55 p.m. Sunday, June 30th, and 7:30 p.m. Monday, July 1st, exclusively at the Film Bar. Again, I'm giving a thumbs down because I wasn't very interested in the topic itself. It didn't get me excited in the topic. Excuse me, other than the art
You've been
form.
Drinking, haven't you?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, do bartenders in this movie, or not in the movie, drink? Do they actually drink while working?
No, I don't recall seeing any of that.
Yeah, I was just curious. And what? And one final question. The
okay.
final question of Jeopardy.
Uh-oh.
Here it is.
Oh, no.
What would have had to happen to give this a thumbs up?
It would have been a little more focused on the art form.
The art form.
Yeah, of the
See,
of
we
the
do
art
it
form.
Differently. That's why I'm real interested. The human development,
right.
interaction form, I'm really interested in. And
then,
that's what Douglas was talking about.
Then I wish you would have picked one theme or the other.
Okay, gotcha.
Right now, because he
it was both.
Even, right, he doesn't even separate it into, you know, like, here is this part. And it's like.
But did he mix and mingle? I mean, were you able to see the art form at all, though?
Yeah, you were definitely able to see the art form. Those were my favorite scenes. But they.
They were too far and few.
Well, not
between.
Even. It was like half and half. Well, they I would say that the part that you like more, the human aspect.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That was a little more. That was a little bit overwhelming.
Are there women bartenders?
Yes. Yeah. And they're in competition. They're you know people
oh, yeah.
are entering
they're,
these competitions.
Oh, they have competitive bartenders.
Yes. That's
this
why.
Sounds like a great movie.
Well, then you see it.
I'm going to give it an anticipatory thumbs up.
All right. Well, then you see it, and then we can discuss it.
Just like Before Midnight. We're going to be battling on that one.
No, he just gave it away.
Oh, no. I might have loved it if it was After Midnight. Okay, then I wouldn't have seen it.
Well,
all right, because it would have been too late. All right. Should we take a quick break right now? All right. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we're live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment. Dave Isaac, alongside Greg Isaac, Joseph Erdo. Stay tuned for a special interview just in a few minutes.
Allison Orr.
Or who?
We'll find out.
Bobby. Okay, we'll be right back.
Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back to Breakthrough Entertainment, live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, every Thursday from 2 to 4 on BreakRadioShow.com, and Saturdays, 11 to 12 on 1480 AM KPHX. Greg Isaac, Joseph Erdo, how are you?
Great.
I sound like an attorney, didn't I? Yeah. All the Supreme Court cases going on. Boy, some interesting decisions. We'll have to talk about that when they make the movie in a couple of years. Okay. Anyway, so we just took a look at the documentary, Hey Bartender, something that I'm interested in seeing because I love the movie Cocktail.
Yeah, me too.
And now joining us is Allison Orr, choreographer for Trash Dance. Allison, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, good. Thank you so much. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Greg Isaac and Joseph Erdo, our great film reviewer. Say hi to Allison.
Hey, Allison. How are you?
Hey, Allison.
I'm doing
so,
great.
Sound like the dating game. Say hi to Allison in your mind. Okay. So, Allison, I haven't seen the movie. I think Joseph has. So, Joseph, why don't you start off?
Sure. Let me tell you a little bit about this film first, our listeners. And, again, thank you so much for joining us, Allison. Allison is a choreographer. Absolutely. And so Allison is a choreographer. She joins city sanitation workers on their daily routes to listen, learn, and ultimately to try to convince them to collaborate in a unique dance performance, thereby finding beauty and grace in garbage trucks and in the men and women who pick up our trash. It is called Trash Dance. It is screening 2 p.m. Saturday, July 13th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, July 14th, exclusively at the Film Bar. This is a great film. Can't give my official review until a couple weeks, but it is. I will say that I am going to recommend that people go and see it.
Nice.
And I know that Dave wanted to ask you a question first here.
Yeah, I saw the trailer. It looked really interesting to me, actually, fascinating. Let me ask you a question. What inspired you to get involved in this type of movie or documentary?
So I have the pleasure. So I'm a choreographer, and I make dances with all kinds of people. And I had long wanted to work with members of our sanitation department because I was first inspired by the amazing movement that they perform, you know, on a regular basis. And I also am interested in exploring parts of our community that might be invisible or behind the scenes and really getting a chance to talk about those stories and those people. And so this was a perfect project for me that I had long wanted to do. It had been on my dream list. And right at the time that I was getting ready to start working on creating the dance with the employees, beginning my year kind of immersion with them and getting to know them, Andy Garrison, the gifted filmmaker of Trash Dance, approached me and asked what I was doing next. And I said, well, this. And he said, perfect. Can I come out and watch? And so he came to my very first week of employee training, and then that's really where it started.
Yeah, and it definitely came out very excellent. And now I have a couple of ideas of themes that I picked out from the film, but I'm curious, what is the theme, would you say, above all, after having seen the completed project, after having gone through the production process, what would you say the theme is?
Oh, it's such a good – I'm so immersed in it that it's sometimes hard for me to stand back, and so I'm eager to hear what you have to say. But I think what I hear people tell me is that you know, the dance and then the subsequent film kind of made about the dance is really about honoring the dignity of labor and mm-hmm. and the beauty of labor and the dignity and hard work and the art and the beauty in our everyday lives. And and really also the capacity for art, I think, and this kind of both the film and the performance to connect people in a way that they might not have expected, and to really in that way kind of have this sense of connection between people who may not feel that way, but in the end really are. So that, I think that's another thing I've heard from people.
Right, I saw all those things in the film, and especially the, you know, in my own words, you know, beauty is all around us in very mm-hmm. mundane or seemingly mundane aspects of our everyday lives. And so if you have any additional comments on that, I'd love to hear them. And also, the one that really surprised me is, you know, just that these men and these women are stepping outside of their comfort zones, and how difficult that was for them, but also how liberating it was, and just how mm-hmm. joyful, and the smiles on their faces. So any additional thoughts on either of those themes?
Well, first, I mean, I've worked with a pretty wide range of folks, maintenance men and roller skaters and a traffic cop and gondoliers in Venice. But I found this group of people to be really the group that got it from the very beginning in a way no group ever had. I think when I said, let's create an event where we tell the true story about who you all are and the true story of your job and how if you didn't show up and go to work today, how the city would come to a standstill. You know, that we so much depend upon your work, but you know, often do we ever take time to stop and tell you thank you or really recognize the skill in it? Most people don't grow up saying, you know, they want to be a garbage man. So they got that. They know that. They know that that there's lots of stereotypes about who they are and why they ended up in this job. And so I think they really saw it. To me, they saw it as an opportunity. Now, when I've talked to some of the employees and we talk about this, they say, well, no, it took some convincing. You know, we didn't know we wanted to do this at first. But I've worked with a lot of groups, and I had to convince a lot of other people a lot more. So I had the time of my life. I feel like I have friends now for the rest of my life that'll do anything for me. And I'm just so appreciative of their generosity and their willingness to do this with me. And it was really easy. I mean, there was so much content there for me as a choreographer and artist to work with. They're such characters. Their lives are so rich. And it was really just a blast to get to do the whole project.
So Allison, as a choreographer, how is this different then? I mean, you sort of answered it in what you just said, but how is it different for you? I mean, you're probably in past jobs, people you dealt with probably were trained in dancing and other forms of art, but I suspect none of these people were really trained as dancers. How was it different for you to get them to understand and...
I mean, we did have a few people involved in the project that were trained performers. There's a professional blues musician who plays in the show. There's a jam skater and a break dancer who's quite gifted who dances in the show. And then there's a guy who raps and who wrote an original musical piece for the show and performed that. But the majority of the people, no, were not trained performers. And actually, much of my work in the past 10 years has been with people who aren't trained performers or are new to dance. But I would say the biggest difference was the scale. I had never done a piece this big. I mean, this is 16 trash trucks. We were on a tarmac bigger than a football field. We had 2,000 people come out to the show and not have enough space for all the others that were, you know, hundreds that were standing trying to get in at the gate. It was a real learning curve for me to work on something this large. And even just learning, you know, how to manipulate the machines, the trash trucks, and then logistically how to pull off something at this level was, I just had a lot of help. I think that's the other thing I'd like to say is that, you know, I worked with a great composer, a great designer, lots of production staff, and then all the people with the city who helped. There is a big team behind this project. It was not at all just me. And I just kept coming back to really good and smart and generous people and saying, what do I do next? And that's kind of how I figure it out. And I'm actually working on a big project right now with public power workers here in Austin with our power company. And it's the same process of just bringing people into the project, getting their insight, getting them to help me, and that's how we pull it off, is really all together.
How do you feel about working with three radio guys that can't dance?
I don't believe that. See, I mean, if you move, you dance. You know, if you breathe, you can dance. We all dance.
Hey, there we go.
You know, I'm not convinced that
tell...
you can't dance.
Yeah, I was going to tell Dave to speak for himself. While watching the actual performance in the film of you know, the big trucks, it kind of reminded me of elephants doing a dance, you know, because they're so large and, you know, their feet going up and everything. So that was really outstanding. So I have two final questions for you. One, is there any plans of bringing this show or any of your shows across the country so we could see it live?
Well, you know, the funny thing is we've talked about that, but it's kind of hard to tour the trash trucks because we need them every day here in Austin. So we can't really go. But
that's
I am
true.
Talking with communities outside of Austin about me and my team, my artistic team, coming to a community and working with that community to create a work that's really representative of who they are in the similar spirit of working with a group of people who aren't trained. But I think, and that's the piece to remember in this kind of work, is that I'm not asking them to be dancers in a ballet sense, or, you know, in a like a so you think you can dance sense, but much more, what's the movement that they're already skilled and rehearsed at? What do they already really know how to do well? And let's use that as the basis for the choreography. So it's showing who they already are, and adding, you know, original music and lighting and just framing it. So yeah, we're talking with different communities. You know, we're talking with a group in Houston right now, and so yeah, I mean there's lots of potential and opportunity, and you know, maybe other trash companies will just start to do it on their own. Who knows?
I think that would be great. And again, it's screening 2 p.m. Saturday, July 13th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, July 14th, exclusively at the Foam Bar. It is called Trash Dance. Finally, my last question for you, Allison, before we let you go, is what did you learn about yourself after going through this process of this film and teaching these men and these women and putting on this show? What did you learn yourself?
Uh-huh. Oh, well, I mean, it always feels like I'm not going to be able to pull it off. And I'm kind of in that place again, you know. It always feels like it's going to be impossible, and it's not. I mean, I think what I was really reminded about, and there's a beautiful moment in the film where Don Anderson, who's really one of the leads, says, you know, we're going to pull this out, Allison. It's going to happen. You've got good people behind you. And I think that's the thing that I really was reminded of and learned, was that you put a really great team together and you get really good people behind you, and you can just do anything. So, and I just keep coming back to that when I'm afraid that this next thing isn't going to work either, that, you know, you get good people together and you can do the impossible.
Well, Allison Orr, thank you so much for being on Breakthrough Entertainment, the choreographer for Trash Dance. And Joseph, again, it's playing what out here?
It is playing in a couple weeks here, exclusively at the Film Bar. We'll keep people posted on it. We will review it again in a couple weeks. We'll have our official review, our official discussion of it, and we're also going to give away some passes to see it. I think a pair of passes. So stay tuned to BreakRadioShow.com and our Facebook page. But again, screening 2 p.m. Saturday, July 13th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, July 14th, exclusively at the Film Bar.
Allison Orr, thank you so much, and we'd love to have you on again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay. Thank you so much. Allison Orr, choreographer for Trash Dance. And why don't we take a quick break right now? When we come back, we will continue our discussion here on Breakthrough Entertainment at the Regis Suites Live, Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be right back.
Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs And if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Breakthrough Entertainment. Wow, I came out louder this time. Half and half. It's like half not there, and now you see him. Now you do.
I put Joseph on right there.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Oh, hey, great. Welcome back again. Dave Isaac.
Well, I'm Joseph Erdo. Iardo. Hey, I used to like that. When I said Erdo, you said Iardo.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, it was great for the first
2 minutes.
Times, and then, yeah.
All right. This is Breakthrough Entertainment, however, with Greg Isaac. Joseph Erdo in studio here at Regis Suites, I should say. And again, thank you to Allison Orr, choreographer, Trash Dance. That is something I definitely want to see. The trailer looked fabulous. I know you can't do the official review yet, Joseph. However, just judging by your nonverbal, I'm going to see it. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, and you should be. And, you know, you might, well, not you, but one of our listeners will have a chance to see it for free with a guest.
Oh, nice.
We're going to be giving away two passes to see the movie on Saturday, July 13th at 2 p.m. That's its first screening, exclusively at the Film Bar again. And so we'll give away our passes. I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do it. We might have you take a picture of some trash. We might have you tell us what the craziest thing you saw in the trash.
Maybe your most famous or well-spoken trash talk.
Yeah, trash talk. Or we can have you have our listeners write poems about trash.
Oh, hey, that would be good. I like it.
Artistic and trash, right?
Yeah. Actually, that's a great idea.
So what we
I'm voting for poetic trash.
All right. Well, then we will mull it over in the next couple of days, and we will announce it on Saturday morning on 1480, 11 a.m. here in Phoenix, 1480 AM, and you'll get the first listen of what the contest is going to be.
Wow!
And, you know, so we'll figure it out here, and we'll also post it on our Facebook page, BreakRadioShow.com. Big F in the upper right hand corner. We call that
corny. Jim. You almost said corny.
Well, I was thinking of the big F. We're going to just say
corny
that.
Corny rhymes with thorny.
We're just going to say Jody Arias in the upper right hand corner. Anyway, old joke. All right, so let's move on to our next film, Dirty Wars. And this filmmaker, this is another documentary. Filmmaker Rick Rowley follows investigative journalist Jeremy Scahill as he is pulled into an unexpected journey chasing down the hidden truth behind America's expanding covert wars. Mm. It is playing exclusively at Harkins Shea 14.
Ooh.
And, nice theater, Shea 14. And Dave, do you believe that there are some dirty wars, some covert wars going on that we don't know about?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, we don't know about it, but you hear sometimes there's leaks about it. Perhaps this documentary, I haven't seen it, maybe this is a leak about it, or actually maybe evidence that there are some wars. And when you say dirty wars, I suspect you're talking about maybe things the public does, they don't know, maybe things that are like cover-ups, you know, rules of engagement that aren't followed. When I saw the trailer, I thought of Pat Tillman cover-up. That was very well known because he was very well known, especially out here in Phoenix, being an ASU star, as well as Arizona Cardinals star leaving in the prime of his career to join the Rangers. And that was a sad situation there, the tragedy of him dying.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure there are things. There's like, don't they call them black ops or something,
sure.
Black operations or
correct.
Or off the books. You know, you see things like that.
Correct.
And I don't know a whole lot about it. Greg, have you heard about any of that stuff?
I really don't follow that type of stuff. But I do believe there's probably stuff going on, especially in previous regimes that we've seen, perhaps, under them. But, I really don't follow it too closely, though.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not that much of a political guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I follow politics about as much as I follow sports, so not very much. But I found this to be an incredibly intriguing and absolutely alarming and grossingly eye-opening movie. I don't want to tell you too much about it because I could not possibly do this topic justice. You know, you've got to see these secrets that we are not being told and that that these filmmakers are bringing to light straight from the film itself as opposed to me trying to do it justice. But it's a genuinely well-made documentary. It does a remarkable job of drawing viewers into its investigation, which is kind of like a real-life mystery, and it's even more consequences to, you know, any other mystery, though. It's deeply disquieting, and it's got an oddly dramatized approach that almost felt like an unsolved mysteries type thing at times. You know, not completely, but that's I've seen other reviewers kind of like call that out and say, you know, how much of this is reenacted and how much is the filmmakers, you know, genuinely discovering these things. I'm not sure, but either way, it gets the point across that these things are quite appalling that we're going to be watching in Dirty Wars. And so political junkies are going to love this film. The rest of us, you know, maybe like myself, maybe like Greg, I was bored from time to time watching this. You know, again, not that big on the politics and stuff like that. Maybe I should be. That's my own flaw. But I was bored from time to time. Nonetheless, the shocking nature of it all combined with the sheer significance of its subject and the far-reaching motif of fighting for our right to knowledge make for a very meritorious movie. I really like that theme of fighting for our right to knowledge. And so I'm giving it a thumbs up. Kind of a barely thumbs up if you're not into politics, but a definite thumbs up if you are. And here's the theme that I pulled out. We as citizens of the United States of America have a right to know about the wars that are being fought in our name. Dave, do you agree?
I agree. I think since we're funding it as taxpayers, but actually more important than that is how consistent is it with our standards of morality?
Yeah.
I think that's more important because not every, there's different parties, Republican, Democrats, the Green Party, and libertarians and the Boston Tea Party. No, I mean the Tea Party people. But the thing is if you think about it, is everyone has certain standards. That was the debate and the controversy over torture. Does America, who has high standards, the high road, really want to engage in torture? Then they had to define what torture is. I think anything painful to me would be torture. But the bottom line is I think that's the most important thing. Does America want to set the standard for the highest level morality, showing the world another way to be in a high level consciousness, peaceful way of setting example, the right path? That's what I'm thinking.
Right, and I would agree with that. Kind of like stamping our name on something without knowing the content.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, I've known in the past there have been some editorial issues, and my name has been attached to other people's reviews.
Oh,
I did not like that. I mean, okay, it's just a mistake, but like deep down inside, that really bothered me because like that is not my words. I did not put my stamp of approval on that. I disagree with that, or even if I did agree with it, it's not exactly my words, and I don't want to be standing behind something that I, you know, may not, it doesn't come from my heart. And if we do not know about these wars, if things are going on, people are dying, if people are killing people without fair trials and whatnot, without our knowing, we don't have the right to put, you know, America's symbol on it. And if someone out there is putting, you know, this is America, this is what, you know, no wonder people hate us.
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. If it's a representation of America, and if, you know, a great majority of Americans don't agree with that, that is not fair. And that which brings up other questions. I mean, what goes on behind the scenes is what you're really talking about. And who really pulls the strings? I mean, could the president, you know, any president be kept in the dark? I mean, you've heard stories like that. There's other powers to be that maybe people just don't know about. And how tied is it into greed, power, corruption? I don't know, but it sounds like it's certainly possible. Yeah. And it can be scary, and it's there's a lot I'm sure the average American has no clue about. I mean, no clue. And I think it's you got to give thumbs up for filmmakers that like to uncover the truth, just to, you know, bring it up to everyone's attention and say, hey, what do you think? It is a democracy, right?
It could be risky for the filmmaker because some of the powers that cover it up, depending on who it is, like you said, you know, it could be people, leadership we don't even know about.
Yeah.
You never know. You know, they might, you know, they said stuff about us and might give the filmmaker a hard time, or if the filmmaker, you know, disappears for a little while, we may not know who did anything.
Yeah, and you will see some of that in this film itself, and you might hear some of those scenes in we have some exclusive sound bites with the director, the filmmaker, Rick Rowley. He was going to join us live, but unfortunately his schedule did not allow it. But we have a few sound bites from him today. You can read the full interview online at breakradioshow.com, and there's plenty more of this interview. But first of all, I asked him about the theme, and this is what he had to say about the theme.
That they have the right to know. We are not political pundits, and we're not politicians. We don't have a partisan axe to grind. We don't have a 12-point program for reforming America's wars overseas. We just know that there are dozens of wars being fought in our name but without our knowledge, and that the ways that these wars are being fought overseas and at home are fundamentally changing what we understand as our Constitution. I mean, the executive wing has assumed the right to kill, to execute American citizens without a trial or without even formal charges. The executive wing has assumed the right to spy on everyone without any kind of probable cause. It's a complete violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. This war has been fought in the shadows with very little public knowledge and essentially no congressional oversight for over a decade. And the purpose of the film is to take this war out of the shadows and into the light so that the American people can begin to have a national discussion about what kind of country we want to be and how this war is going to be fought in the future.
Yeah, so you know, you get the idea that like I said, do we want to put our, you know, stamp of approval on something that we don't necessarily know about?
Yeah, that's you got to give thumbs up to this guy. That's courageous, isn't it?
Right, and as Greg said, that, you know, while you're making the film, It's scary enough, but I was really surprised to learn is about the backlash for this film. You know, I asked him about the backlash and asked him, you know, because I imagined when this movie came out, you know, people would have been very furious, especially the people who were working so hard to cover this up. So I asked him, and let's see what he had to say about that.
What's remarkable is that the backlash hasn't happened, that the film has been embraced, and that there are a lot of people inside of the military and, you know, inside the CIA are also share the critiques of the global war on terror, that it's creating more enemies than it's killing, that it's a tactic without a strategy, and are very worried about the way that it's undermining civil liberties back home in the U.S. Part of the reason it hasn't happened is that there has been a sea change in American public opinion that's happened very recently, just in the last few months. And when we started this film, no one was talking about drones, and no one was talking about kill lists or domestic spying or any of the sort of central issues of the global war on terror. And now, just in the last few months, those discussions have worked their ways from the fringes of American culture onto the editorial pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post and elsewhere. Finally, you know, 12 years into the war on terror, we're going to begin to have a national discussion about what it's doing to the world around us and what it's doing to change us as a people as well.
Yeah, so yeah, I was surprised. No backlash, right?
That is interesting. I wonder why.
I think, like he said, that, you know, we are learning a lot right now with WikiLeaks and,
yeah,
you know, all this spying going on, the Verizon wireless stuff.
Right.
There's a lot of content.
Yeah, I think people know. I think I'm not that political either. I know, though, I mean, if you remember when after 9/11 and the whole Iraq war started, how still to this day, to me, it just made no sense.
Yeah.
Because the people responsible, or at least what they were telling us, were from other countries and not in Iraq. And then it seemed like when we went into Iraq, so this was one that it was bigger because it was, you know, people in power at the time did that. But I did find it interesting, some of the documentaries and movies around that time that I did watch about that. And so that was years ago, you know, 8-10 years ago at least. But that was obviously a bigger issue in the sense where because of the powers, it was actually the guy in power doing it. You know, everyone sort of realized, hey, you know, what's going on here? But that's interesting, you know, I have sort of always on the back of my mind, yeah, there must be some stuff going on, even if it's minor things that very few know about. So it's something to keep an eye out for.
Certainly is. And so finally, I asked Rick Rowley to sum up the experience that he had while making Dirty Wars, and this is what he had to say.
It was a harrowing 3 years, and it really took Jeremy and I to the extremities of what we were capable of. I mean, there was a moment in Somalia when it felt totally pointless and empty. And, you know, the thing that brought us through was the trust that all the families that we had filmed had put in us. You know, like in Afghanistan when we began, when we were knocking on the doors of houses where night raids had happened around the country, we were the first Americans these people had seen since the American soldiers had kicked their doors in and killed half their family. And they invited us in, and they shared these painful stories with us because they believed deeply in the power of their story. They thought that if somehow that story could be shared with the American people, that it would matter, that it would be significant in some way. And they trusted us to, you know, two guys, military-aged men from the same country as the soldiers who'd come into their homes. They trusted us with that story, and they trusted us to do everything in our power to bring that story home. And so, you know, we had to, no matter how sort of hopeless and empty things felt at the low moments of the film, we had to bring it home.
Yeah, and so again, you have to kind of go by your gut, as you said before, Dave, these guys were very courageous in what they did, and I think that that's kind of what kept them going, you know, to make this from beginning to end, and to not fear that backlash, again, that never happened, but, you know, you kind of got to, when you're getting close to the end, get a little bit afraid, and do we really want to put this out there? But they knew that they had to. They knew that they wanted to help people, and I believe that the film will. So, again, it's a thumbs up. It's playing exclusively at Harkin Shea 14. It is called Dirty Wars. Go see it.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I like documentaries anyway. How about you, Greg?
I do, actually. Well, it depends, obviously. It's like with any other type of movie, you know. I like comedies and whatnot, but obviously you're not going to like every comedy. But it's not a preference nor a non-preference. You know, if it looks good. Ones I like, you know, I like the Fahrenheit 9/11 Michael Moore movie. I like some of his documentaries. I really like Super Size Me a lot.
Yeah.
Now, that one I liked a lot, but it also made me feel a bit uneasy. Although lately I've been doing good. It's funny, I saw that movie probably when it first came out, like in 2004 or 2005.
Well, that was a movie. I thought that was an intervention they sent you to Sweden.
Okay. And so, Dave will be muted. It's like, oh, man, I'm never having McDonald's again. And on the next day, sounds good. I'll get some nuggets.
No, they have good fries.
But they do. But what's interesting is the last few months I've actually been able to stay away from it, ironically, which is almost like 10 years after seeing that.
Well, it seems like we always bring up food and stuff. And did you see this morning that Carl's Jr.,
uh-oh,
opened on Bell Road
and 35th.
Yeah,
they reopened.
After their fire back in November. They opened this morning.
That's why
they
closed the fire.
The first 500 people who bought a combo this morning got free meals for the rest of the year.
I didn't know when it was opening, but I saw on, I believe it was Facebook or one of the social medias that, yeah, they said something about the first 500 people that will be in that location.
How come we didn't go?
I know this is radio.
I'm staying away from that, but still, it's delicious.
People can't see, you know, how far apart my fingers are right now, but I was this close to going there last night to the camp out. I guess they were there.
Oh, people were camping?
Yeah, they were camping, and I was surprised. I heard that they were only there since like 8 o'clock last night. I would have been there since Sunday.
We drive by.
Was it unlimited food? Like,
no,
or?
Unfortunately, it wasn't. I think that they got a coupon book and they got one free menu item or something like that for the remainder of the year.
Oh, okay.
Each week.
Oh,
wow.
Well, on the other hand, it's not bad because you don't want to eat it every day. And Carl's is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I haven't had that in a while, trying to stay away from the fast food. But, you know, maybe once a week. So, maybe
that
might be good. Yeah.
I got 52 meals from KFC at one point.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. I forget how I won it, but
they raise their prices.
I was going to say that's huge now, because now just to get like a little chicken leg, it's like $20.
Remember we went there and I go, wow, it wasn't just, it looked like to me it was like a big raise of prices.
It's because they took the bones out. I ate the bones.
You did? I just ordered the bones. Not really. But anyway, should we take a quick break?
Sure.
All right. So, Joseph, thank you for that on Dirty Horrors again, Shea 14.
Yes.
And that's a nice theater. Not far from here, about 10 minutes from here, by the way.
Absolutely.
That would be good to see. How long of a movie is it? You know?
I think it's about an hour and a half.
That's very cool. That sounds really good. And this is Breakthrough Entertainment live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac, Craig Isaac in the studio, and Joseph Erdo. We'll be right back.
Dave.
You know what I like, Tom.
The remix.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling.
With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
At Beerenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
At Beerenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
I slap with the bathroom.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Joseph Erdo and Greg Isaac. And Joseph, what a great show. And Greg, sorry, I didn't include you. What else am I thinking?
How could you?
Oh, but I like the slap of the face.
Yes,
that was a good movie. I love
Man. Man.
Very good. Paul Rudd. Yeah. Excellent actor, of course, Jason Segel. I love Sarah Marshall, too, that movie.
You know, a good one that I don't know if we reviewed, but we may have,
actually, now that I think about it, you might have. But I saw recently, maybe a couple of weeks ago on Stars, they have, before the new releases premiere, you can, you know, watch it on their in-demand thing. And it's with, Andy Samberg, who, of mm-hmm. course, was in I Love You Man, and Rashida Jones, who was also in I Love You Man. It's mm-hmm. called, I think, like, Celeste and Jesse Forever or something.
Yes.
I forgot. Did you review that one?
Yeah.
I thought you did.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I don't really care for Rashida Jones.
Really?
Much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like Andy Samberg a lot, and I
right.
wish that he would have been in that movie a lot more than her. I thought
it
was her perspective.
I think because then she writed or directed. I liked it, though, and I liked her. But, yeah, that is the one thing, though, would even have elevated it, because in the middle of it, he was away a little bit at times, but maybe if they focused more in on his situation that's going on, maybe that would have added to it. But pretty good. The type of movie I think Dave may like.
Yeah,
I didn't see it.
Romance.
Yeah, I like that, except Before Midnight.
Well, let's talk about
Let's get ready
midnight.
To rumble.
Remember, I liked it. It was a breakthrough.
You said a breakthrough, and although I like the actor and the actress, who is it, Ethan Hawke?
Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy is the third in the series.
I thought they were very good as far as acting, but I'll tell you, it was disjointed. I mean, here the first half of the movie, they were getting along, they were cracking jokes, they were walking wherever they were walking in that vineyard or whatever, sometimes holding hands, reminiscing. And then all of a sudden when they went to that, to the hotel? Well, anyway,
sure,
they went there. And it was like she was a different person. She was like a doctor, what is it, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It reminded me of an empty shell of meaningless conversation.
Really?
It did
meaningless conversation?
Yeah, it was an empty shell of meaning. Actually, I'm getting to be a good writer like you are.
Huh.
You're
a mentor. I don't know about that. But
okay, yeah, maybe not. But an empty shell of meaningless conversation.
You're going to be right.
And it was silly. It was like she was angry, but she wasn't. And then she'd go outside and come back in and go outside and come back in. And then it just didn't even make sense when she talked to the son twice and he looked. They had no conclusion on that. It's like, well, why wasn't he talking to the son? And it was just, it seemed.
He asked to talk to the son.
But whoever wrote that, which was Julie, what was her name?
Delpy.
And it was a pretty Delpy movie.
Oh.
I mean, it was just.
Goodbye.
Joseph.
I left the building.
He's left the building.
Joseph
Scott, help.
Oh, no.
There he goes.
But it just shows how people can see a movie and look at it two different ways. But it made no sense to me. She was so extreme in her behavior in the same scene, and it didn't make sense. And at the end, it was clever because he was a writer. But I won't say then, but it was clever, but stupid still. There was no resolution. There was no substance to how to solve their issues. It was like someone one day was half asleep writing that movie.
You would have liked it if they would have made it a very simple ending.
It wasn't the ending.
We might have to change our surprise guest for 3:15, Julie Delpy.
Oh, yeah. I like her. Well, she was sort of cute, though.
Oh, there you go. Now,
she's going to appreciate that. She writes movies.
I know, she wrote
it. Songwriter and everything.
But what I'm saying is, I hope her songs are better than her movies. But the thing is, it just didn't see cohesive and relevant. I've seen better fights in my neighbor's marriages. I mean, it just didn't make sense.
You're just surprising me right now, Dave.
I know. It is a surprise.
Who you are. These are like Dave's random enlightenment squared.
Yeah, but it was just an empty, meaningless conversation.
Wow.
No consistency. It wasn't coherent. And especially just dumb. It was just like first half, they seemed happy, and the second half, all of a sudden, they were, completely arguing over something that...
Isn't that real life?
No, not the way it was set up. I don't think it was. Because I think there would have been some indication they had problems in the first half of the movie.
There was indication of that.
Okay, tell me.
She said...
It's probably when I fell asleep.
Oh, no.
Well, I hope not, because it was like one of the first scenes.
Yeah, that happened. I wasn't with you, but you told me it was like the second Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, what was that?
The first one.
and you told me, oh, I didn't like it. I fell asleep. And then I said, well, I've seen it too, and it was actually pretty good. And
yeah.
So you go, oh, okay. So you went back and
I loved
it. Right. And
but this one, I didn't fall asleep. I was up, wide awake. It didn't have the profound psychological interaction. Hey, nice. That is nice.
It would be if you're right, but
wow.
You're wrong. So.
Wrong.
Yeah, near the beginning when they are in the car,
yeah.
They start to have little arguments. They can't have
not
the biggest
much.
Argument. Well, the kids are in the back. They're sleeping.
They were sleeping, though.
How could they have that big of an argument? That's why she says, mark this time right now. She says, this is the beginning of the end. This is the crack in our relationship.
I thought she was joking.
You thought she was joking?
Yeah, I thought it was so silly because they seemed to have a good time conversation. And that was really slow and boring, by the way. I mean, watching in a movie two people driving in a car, and then he starts to eat an apple, and she got pissed off at him eating an apple.
And
what's wrong with apple? Wasn't organic?
There was.
He took the apple from the daughter.
I know, but it was half. It was almost gone, though.
Haven't you ever eaten one of those apples?
Why would you get mad at that? It was brown, even, the apple. It was disgusting. Yeah, I don't know if she was sitting on her or eating it.
Would you, when Greg was a little boy, would you ever argue in front of him?
Yeah.
Were you laughing?
Well, he had to, if you knew who the other person involved was.
Oh, my God.
Possible.
Oh, that thing. Yeah. Abuse expressed on this program completely.
So usually he wasn't doing the arguing.
Thank you very much. I'm here till Thursday. This Thursday. But, no, I just didn't see it as reality. I just didn't. I thought that conversation was just sort of normal. They seemed to get along. Nothing major. I was watching a lot of nonverbals. She did not seem that angry. Driving in the beginning of the movie and having a conversation. They looked like they were getting along, actually talking more than most married couples.
Maybe she didn't look angry, but she looked frustrated.
Not that even frustrated, except when she talked about the dream job.
Exasperated.
Yeah, but she, you know, she's asked, should I take the job? And there's no conclusion, and she didn't even have a conclusion. It just didn't seem like real issues. It seemed lighthearted. Nothing significant, nothing profound.
You know why they're leaving it open for after 2 a.m., which is the fourth installment in the series.
Oh.
Comes out in a year.
Before noon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, before Nooners.
Yes. There you go.
I don't know about Nooners, but anyway.
What's a Nooner?
That's okay.
Charles Nooner? You've heard of the great Charles Nooner?
Heard of the Nooner? I don't know who Charles Nooner is.
No, yeah, he's a good commentator, delightful critic. Anyway, total thumbs down, double thumbs down on this
double
movie.
Thumbs down. It just went further.
Double thumbs down.
It's a breakthrough for me, and you say that it did not represent reality. I
no.
think that it completely represented reality, and for once, the movie is not a fairy tale. It is real life.
Remember,
it was a fairy tale.
From the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, Leave It to Beaver and My Three Sons.
No, he still thinks that's reality.
Yeah, well, there was one scene that didn't even make sense why
now,
they were...
Now if your hair is parted like the beavers, usually you're a serial killer.
But, you know, and when she says, oh, couples massage, it must be, you know,
the
like...
Naughty Vegas massage.
Yeah, it must be, like, really bad or something, you know, like one of those bad massages.
Those
okay, where did that come from? It was a high-class hotel.
A good massage.
It was stupid dialogue. And and then they started making out,
have
right?
Have you ever been to a hotel?
And they didn't have to throw that scene in because Ethan Hawke, you know, he probably enjoyed that scene.
I didn't enjoy it because it was very uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't want to share exactly what happens, but they're saying terrible things to each other. No, which, okay, for you.
Oh, maybe you grew up in a, well, what?
You
probably grew up in the 50s.
No.
I mean 30s.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know what you guys are saying. But
yeah, he's the decider. George Bush here. I mean, Greg is the decider. Well, George Bush is known as a decider.
He was?
Yeah.
But you.
I am the decider.
You were probably too accustomed to that dialogue because you said it all the time and you were said that stuff all the time.
No.
Full speech.
I thought it was empty, meaningless conversation. It did not make sense.
So let me ask you this. Then.
Yes.
Okay, because I completely disagree with everything you said.
Real quick,
yeah.
that scene you guys are talking about, if I go to Mr. Skin's website,
yes.
Will I? Oh, okay. Maybe we'll have to talk about it next time.
Well, that was pretty decent. But.
All right. Anyway, I don't want to upset Julie Delpy anymore.
Right.
But anyway, so would you agree that it is very romantic at the end? The very last scene, very realistic version of romance. And
that
very
one scene I did say was clever.
Yeah.
And I would say romantically clever.
Okay.
And that's it, but it didn't. It was out of context to what they were going through. It was clever in the sense that, I'll just say, yes, it was clever. It was the best scene of the night since it meant that the end was afterwards.
Okay, well, then I'm gonna make you a challenge right now.
A challenge, a Pepsi challenge.
Yes, a Pepsi challenge.
I like Pepsi better than Coke.
You're going to like this challenge, probably not. You're going to go home. You're going to watch Before Sunrise all the way through from start to end. Then you're going to watch Before Sunset from start to end. And then you're going to watch this movie.
Would that be better then?
I think that it would. It would even be better if you were like me, where you watched the first one 18 years ago, and then you watched the second one 9 years ago, and then you watch this one now. And you know, this past
18 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're like
five.
And you were five?
Well, no, but you were probably about the same age, right?
You watched it 18 years ago.
Mid to late 20s, I'd assume.
I remember. I was 10. I'm 29.
Oh, okay.
So I was around, yeah.
You look younger. Well, looks like you could have been five.
That's why I said that, but I do. But I'm
right.
Just throwing out a number
for fun.
You gotta
so are you saying that you can't watch this show maybe independently of the other two, Before Sunrise Tequila and Sunset?
Well, I believe that you can, but Sunrise Tequila. But clearly,
Tequila Sunrise. Come on, get with it, guys. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, bartender. Clearly, you are an example
of Nikolai Red Eyes.
Of Archie Bunker? Is that what you're going to say? Oh, my God.
Who hasn't seen the other two.
Yeah, watch them consecutively.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I think that it would be a beneficial experience if you.
All right, I will do that, and then maybe even watch the third one again.
Right. Well, Well, we will agree to disagree.
Yeah, but that's good controversy.
Our listeners go to Facebook. Our Facebook. See, you've got me so upset right now.
Dave.
Yeah, I can't even talk. I am. It's so hot outside.
This
I cannot respond.
This is great to have disagreements on the movies, right?
It's like Ebert Roper.
Yeah, it is like Ebert and Roper.
Go to breakradioshow.com. Click on the big F in the upper right hand corner, Jody Arias, and. Write what your comments are about Before Midnight.
Yeah, and if you agree with me, give me a thumbs up.
But no one will agree with you, so...
Oh, no, I know other people will agree with me.
I'm sure that there'll be...
Did you pay them?
No.
There will be people on both
but
sides.
But this is great. I think we should do this every week. Have a controversy on films that... but we don't have breakthroughs every week. Or disgusting.
No, we don't really always have breakthroughs. Disgusting. We don't. Well, we don't always have breakthroughs.
I thought you liked that scene, though.
Wow, that scene was okay. I've seen better, though.
Dave's still on some other channel that we use.
No.
Still on,
For my neuro-linguistic program, I know I didn't care about that scene, but for my neuro-linguistic programming background,
you know,
the interactions were
like
inconsistent.
Paul Rubens.
The verbal did not match the nonverbal. There was just inconsistency and incongruence, boys,
mm-hmm.
between their verbal and nonverbal skills. Is either bad acting or bad dialogue. I think it's both.
I'm done.
All right, this is so great. Greg, you enjoy it.
I don't think I'm going to see the movie, though. Not because of anything. It's just not my type. I haven't seen the first two.
I thought it'd be my type.
See, the reason I brought up Jesse and Celeste forever.
Harold and Maude.
Yeah, that type of kind of story, love type story, because, you know, Andy Samberg, Rashida Jones, there was the humor in it, the type that I like too and stuff. So that's the type I could deal with, but I don't think I would like it, but not because of why Dave's saying, just because it's not my type of movie. That is his type of movie, though.
It is.
He
didn't care for it.
But I think you have a point. I think if he saw the first two,
I will
watch
check
the
that
second
out. That's fair enough. I will
take out on some popcorn.
That.
You'll go, wow, okay. Now I'm going to rent the third one when it comes out, the red box or whatever. Wow, I like it now. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, this is good. You'll even start talking like this. Yeah, Batman.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
we'll take a quick break right now when we come back. I know we got a couple more to get to. Of course, 100 Bloody Acres.
Yes.
and Maniac, two folks from those movies we talked to last week. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you say on that. Breakthrough Entertainment, visit BreakRadioShow.com. If you're not there right now, click on the big F, and then you can talk about how wrong Dave is about. Well, wait, what's the movie called? A Four Midnight, right? I almost said After Midnight. We'll be back in just a minute.
After the break.
One, two, three, four.
At Beerum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerum Baum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment here live at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, everyone. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Greg Isaac and Joseph Erdo. We just had an enlightening, invigorating, and just, what's the word, Greg? Just
pissing match?
Yes, that is it on Before Midnight. And
which is odd.
I gave a thumbs down.
I used to have a pissing match on Before Midnight.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, though, again, I will try to find that scene. Mr. Skin, Paul Rudd does a good impersonation of him and Knocked Up. As well as I'll have to try to find that website as well. What was it, the one that Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, Jason Segel?
Yeah,
it's not a real site. I forgot what that site was called.
Yeah, remember they were doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Then they found out that there's a Mr. Skin and that worried them a little bit. But, yeah, interesting stuff going on there. But still a couple movies to get to. I'm looking forward to both of these, especially because we got to speak, of course, with the brothers that were involved with the 100 Bloody Acres, Cameron Cairns and Colin Cairns last week, and then also with Maniac as well. And so, Joseph, 100 Bloody Acres.
That is correct, 100 Bloody Acres. In this film, there are two brothers who struggling to keep their organic bone and blood fertilizer business afloat, stumble upon three travelers stranded on a remote country road and cook up a radical solution to their supply problem. Basically, in this film, they are picking up dead bodies on the side of the road in car accidents and stuff, and these dead bodies are going missing, and they're using them to basically make blood and bone fertilizer, and they're selling it. And it's doing
is that good fertilizer?
Oh yeah, there's a guy in the movie who is thrilled because his potatoes have never been more, you know, they're flourishing. His potatoes,
but they're red potatoes though.
Well, I have no comment on that. But anyway, so what they do in this film, you know, that's bad enough. But then they go out and the one guy trying to impress his brother says, "I'm going to kidnap these three people on the side of the road," and because they were running low on the dead bodies and they wanted to, keep their business afloat. And
wow.
So he kidnaps these three people who are stranded or lost or broke down on the side of the road. And they put them through the meat grinder.
Oh, they do?
Literally. Yeah. Well, I'll let you see the film for yourself, but someone does get processed through a meat grinder in this film. As they told us last week, you know, there was a full body cast made of silicone and stuff like that. There was actually skull in it. And so it's very lifelike, this one scene. A lot of blood, a lot of guts. But it is all for comedic value too.
Yes.
So this.
Oh yeah, it was a comedy too.
Right. You're not gonna be scared in this movie at all. It is not. You know, it's a comedy that is very gruesome and gross and with horror themes. It is not a horror movie.
Oh, good.
So it's more of a comedy. It's playing exclusively at Harkins Valley Art. I thought it was fantastic.
Really?
I love these.
A thumbs up.
Yeah, it's definitely a thumbs up. I thought it was fantastic.
What time did you see it? When you did see it?
I saw it, I think, in the middle of the day.
So it was before midnight.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes, it was before midnight. It features guts and gore galore, all of which is played for absolute authenticity.
Gore galore?
Gore galore.
That's
gore galore.
So funny. That is... James Bond had a galore in his movie. Anyway, go ahead.
That's on the site that Greg was talking about. Anyway, lots of laughs
Willow.
In this movie, and albeit extremely dark ones. Cameron and Colin Cairns fertilize their first feature film with a cornucopia of clever cracks, jokes, and a couple of complex characters. This is a relationship movie at its heart, which we'll talk about in a moment, and an ounce of organic heart. And they've harvested a humorously homicidal motion picture. I'm giving it a thumbs up.
A breakthrough?
No, not a breakthrough.
Okay.
Those are few and far between.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, this we might
somewhere between 10 a.m. and 12 a.m.
Yes, indeed, that is correct. So I thought this was great, and I would definitely recommend you take a look. Playing exclusively at the Harkins Valley Art beginning tomorrow. And so now here's one of the themes. Well, first of all, it seems that some businesses will do just about anything to stay afloat.
Right.
We've seen that. So if you want to talk about that, we can of course talk about some moral lapses that some businesses have. But I liked one of the comments that the filmmakers had last week when they joined us. And again, you can see that full interview in the archive on BreakRadioShow.com. And I've also transcribed a piece of it for you in the movie review section. But one of the comments that they said is, we're all just trying to get through life while doing the right thing. But sometimes, whether you are running a business, trying to get ahead in some field, or trying to forge a relationship, you have to make what may not necessarily be the most moral decisions.
Hmm.
What do you think about that, Dave?
Well, I think all decisions, as I've said in the past, originate from what your values are. So your values really direct your behaviors and decisions. So if, unfortunately, people don't stick to their most precious values and fear gets in the way, let's say, for example, in business and you have a slow month, perhaps you might go off your values of honesty and customer service and start cutting corners and less quality. And that means you're run by profits and not standards of excellence. So I think that's a problem. I think people should know their highest values, pretty much stick to them, and in fact, definitely stick to your three highest values, and money should never be one of them.
Well, I think
corruption or power, anything like that, because that will dictate your decisions and behaviors, and it could be a real problem in the long-term success.
I agree with that. But you see, in this film, the two brothers, they are determined not to sacrifice their, you know, their values for their consumers. They don't want to sacrifice the quality and come up with a less effective fertilizer. That's why they are determined to go out and get some more blood and bones.
So their value was good quality, but then when does human life trump good quality?
Should
never.
Right.
Ever.
Right. You know, but
I'm not going to say anything about
the before. Was that before midnight?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
But see, these guys, you know,
Ethan Hawke lying too.
Yeah, it is a relationship movie. These two brothers, you know, the one guy is just heartless, and the other one, he just wants to impress his brother. He wants to do the right thing, and you know, he's kind of timid in a way. You see in his relationship with one of the victims that they have, a young woman, that you know, he's just a normal guy like any of us, and has very human traits. Wants to impress people, wants to be a normal guy, but he's kind of been under his brother's thumb for his whole life. And, you know, but he's just trying to do the right thing.
But see, that's the perfect example where, number one, a value of impressing, you know, wanting your brother's love.
Mm-hmm.
Two is wanting to keep the quality, which would probably keep the profits.
Yeah.
But then what do you have to sacrifice when you start killing people? That's just not a good thing.
Absolutely.
And that's the whole point. This could have great meaning with all the listeners out there. And how do you apply it to your own life? What are your values? What are your top three values? And are you consistent with them? Or do you let fear flip-flop your values? Maybe a number seven value goes to number one. And under times of great stress, perhaps people do things like that. And the true character people, I think, stay with their values, regardless, knowing they have the confidence to get through anything rather than shortcut or actually do things that may cause harm to other people. And I think that's important. This could be a great lesson, a great theme mm-hmm. of this movie, not just the comedic entertainment value of this movie, but maybe to show how values can flip-flop, and maybe that's just not a good thing.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, and that is correct. And it's also a lesson in empathy, you know, that there are people who out there who are doing some bad things, making some moral decisions that, you know, we would not necessarily agree with. But at the end of the day, they're just trying to do the right thing. And sometimes in life, it's hard, you know.
How do you define the right thing? The right thing for them? The right thing for the morality of society, the right thing, you know, what's the context? That's important.
Yes, that is true. And I think that it's dependent upon the individual, you know, what is the right thing for that person.
And also based on, you know, whether they're self-serving or selfless. And
right.
So it really, it's what criteria you're looking through. And it sounds like this movie, as a movie, they were looking to keep the quality up.
Yeah.
Which and if they didn't get the quality maintained and stabilized, what would that mean to them? Would they be out of business? Would they lose their own confidence? Would it be low self-esteem? So that sounds like a very self-serving value.
True, but he's a sheltered guy. He's been on this bone and blood fertilizer farm for most of his life, and his best friend is his brother. I mean, you got to feel.
Did the brother know? Did they both know that they were getting live bodies now?
No, the other brother didn't know. He was shocked when he brought them, but he had no problem with killing them.
And, oh, he did?
No, but the other brother who actually brought back the bodies, he was kind of once he realized and saw what was going to happen to the bodies, he wanted to keep them alive. And I don't want to spoil too much.
Yeah.
The movie, but he was thinking maybe he could somehow
borrow a few bones.
Exactly. Harvest that, you know, keep these people alive, maybe borrow a few things, a little bit of blood, and maybe keep their business afloat, and then maybe
their
no
business?
One will notice. Their business.
Oh, a great business.
Yeah. Yeah, so but I'm giving it a thumbs up, and again, I don't want to. We've gone really, really deep into this.
This is good though.
Yeah.
Wow, value. I like
very,
it.
Yeah. And but at the end of the day, this is a very entertaining movie. Yes, there is more meaning to it.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But it's a very entertaining movie. It's a lot of fun. You will laugh. You will have a good time. So I definitely recommend going to see it at the Harkins Valley Art this weekend.
Wow.
Called 100 Bloody Acres, and it is bloody indeed.
Wow, okay.
And it's from Australia.
And we had the writer-directors, Cameron and Colin.
Karens.
Karens,
you
yeah.
thought I'd say Karens, didn't you?
Yeah.
Karens.
There's another guy, Patrick Karens, right?
Yeah.
You ever heard of him? Yeah.
So, anyway, this is something I usually don't see horror movies. Like you said, it's a comedy. I might want
to
see this.
I think you'll laugh. You might have to shield your eyes.
Yeah, you know, I might.
Because one of my favorites is Zombieland.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
That wasn't bad. I did see that.
It was
that was
hilarious.
Yeah.
It's a good mix of everything.
Yeah.
So
there's a great song.
Similar.
There's a few great songs in this movie. But, you know, the
Down Under.
Yeah, Down Under. They have some great music. The first song that's played in this movie over the title credits is hilarious. I haven't been able to find it for download, but which we talked about Napster last week. Anyway,
oh yes.
No, I shouldn't say that. But anyway, it is something along the lines of even when I am trying to do wrong, I can't be right, or something like that.
Anyway. I've heard that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, thinking of Down Under, in addition to Donnie Marie, Dave's other favorite Las Vegas show is Thunder from Down Under.
No.
Yeah.
Excalibur.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, just because I dance here, but no, not really. I've heard of that. That's like Chippendales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the Rescue Rangers, but
yeah, Chippendales.
How about Fat Bottom Girls? You like that song?
Yeah, I used to dance with him, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I don't know that one, but Thunder Down Under. I was talking about that at one of my favorite restaurants with some of the people.
Isn't Queen your favorite band and you didn't know that song?
No. Oh, they have Thunder Down Under? No, they have Killer Bee.
Okay, no, they Queen.
I mean Killer Queen.
There you go.
Killer Bee or Killer Queen?
I
like Queen. Good band. Okay, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We have one more movie to discuss, and that is Maniac. And I did see Elijah Wood on one of the talk shows talking about Maniac. I couldn't believe it. We'll talk all about it when we come back. This is Breakthrough Entertainment Live here at Regent Suites, Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be right back.
Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times.
Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.riiadvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Greg Isaac and Joseph Erdo. We've had a great time so far on the last leg of our two-hour show, Entertainment, always on Thursday. BreakRadioShow.com brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network, BreakRadioShow.com. And, of course, from 11 to 12 every Saturday, 1480 a.m., in Phoenix, Arizona, that's KPHX. We talk entertainment. And we have one more movie to review. It is called Maniac.
It is. It is.
Elijah Wood. And I told you, I saw the day after we, didn't we interview, yeah, Frank Calhoun.
Yes.
The director, I saw on late night TV, and I'm thinking it was, I think it was Jay Was
Morton
it?
Downey Jr. Oh, no.
No. It was one of the, I don't know if it was Jay Leno, but he was on, Elijah Wood was talking about Maniac on one of the late nights.
Well, you didn't recognize Jay Leno?
I can't remember which one it was. It could have been Jimmy Fallon. It could have been Leno. It could have been, who's the other guy? Kimmel?
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel. They all look the same.
Yeah, I like Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
I think he's the funniest.
And isn't the guy that does Weekend Update, he's going to have his own show.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah, Seth Meyers.
Yeah,
or,
Seth Meyers.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
yeah.
pretty
no,
good.
I like Fallon. Yeah.
But anyway, they interviewed him right there and there. Elijah Wood on Maniac. And we just interviewed them. Then there it was. We are.
Well, he was actually not being interviewed for Maniac. The reason is once news broke that Kim Kardashian and Kanye West named their baby daughter
North.
Exactly. So Northwest, no middle name. They wanted Elijah Wood on because that's the only North we've known. Remember, he was in the movie North in the mid-90s when he was just a little kid. That was his name.
Yeah, but they did it for future directors and filmmakers to have the kid named Northwest because when they interview and she auditions this Northwest girl, baby, they'll say, no, we want to go a different direction.
Okay, there you go.
Funny. All right, well.
It depends what type of movie she tries out for.
All right, there we go.
Elijah Wood in this film, Maniac, plays the withdrawn owner of a mannequin store whose obsession with a young artist escalates until it becomes clear that she has unleashed a long-repressed compulsion in him to stalk and kill.
Ooh.
This is playing exclusively at the film bar, And as I told you last week, it is in the first-person perspective,
yeah.
Which means we see everything from Elijah Wood's eyes. Now, that might sound weird because, well, does Elijah Wood even star in this film? Yes, of course, because we hear his voice. We see him in mirrors when he looks around in mirrors and stuff like that. So, and you know, some people, you know, he has some relations with some women, and he looks at the ceiling on the mirror on the ceiling.
Also, he's on the back. He's on his back.
He's on his back, and he sees, yes, but again, he's not just doing the dirty wars. He's actually taking the life of these women.
Oh.
Yes, and so you get to see that firsthand. What is it, Dave?
No.
I'm curious. What's it like firsthand? What is it like to kill someone?
I have no idea.
Well, you'll know after you see Maniac.
Oh my goodness! So it is from first person, like you said.
Yeah, the entire movie from start to finish, and you know, it's a merciless masterpiece of a motion picture. This is outstanding. This is a thumbs up, not a breakthrough, close to a breakthrough, but definitely a thumbs up.
Really?
It essentially places the viewers in the driver's seat for a firsthand look at a psychopath's vicious actions and savage thoughts. Because sometimes we leave what is actually happening and we see kind of what is going on in this character's mind. Which
through our own filters. You're saying it's
through his filters.
But no, I mean, ordinarily we'll see it through our interpretation.
Right.
But this is strictly... this is how he thinks.
Right. So, you know, because sometimes a killer's visions are sometimes less stimulated by reality than they are by neuroses. So sometimes he might not, you know, be thinking clearly, and we might be seeing some strange things. We're seeing some flashbacks.
Right.
Of his relationship with his mother and stuff. And I don't want to, you know, share too much about that because that has a lot to do with the film. But, you know, it's a remake of a 1980s slasher. I never saw the original.
Slasher?
Yeah, a horror film. That's a genre. And it will shock and disturb you unlike any other horror flick that you've ever seen. That's because you don't watch Maniac. Dave, you don't watch Maniac.
You live it.
Yes. You experience Maniac.
Oh, my God. You're really become him.
Yes. And then the only thing more unsettling than looking directly into a killer's eyes is looking directly through the killer's eyes.
Nicely written. You are a masterful writer.
It's, I know, and other people try to review Before Midnight, and they're, like, so wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, so anyway, thumbs up.
It's interesting. I haven't seen the 1981, but what I had heard from some people is some of the differences in the character. The main guy who Elijah played is in this one, he's kind of a loner, and then... in the 1981, it's just a cool guy, and they wanted to make it look like
right, he's a big
doing
guy.
That stuff's
he's,
awesome.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a different look on it.
Yeah, he's kind of more of a menacing guy, where Elijah Wood is just kind of like a guy next door. And actually, in my interview, because I interviewed the director twice, once on the radio here, and also once prior to that, and you can see that interview. You can hear our interview on BreakRadioShow.com in the archives, and also you can read my full interview with him that I did separately also on BreakRadioShow.com under the articles and the movie reviews.
Uh-huh.
But the director, Frank Calhoun, who joined us last week, said something about how, you know, he really wanted to make it that much scarier, that Elijah Wood just looks like the guy next door. He's got these really kind eyes. He's soft-spoken. He doesn't look like anyone who's scary.
He's nothing but a bad hobbit.
Yeah, he's not very scary at all.
Uncle Greg didn't laugh at that.
Because...
it's nothing like a bad hobbit.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's...
he got it.
So we're more scared of this guy because he could be the guy next door.
Ooh.
You know, he could be someone that we run into every day. Because you're not going to run into, you know, unless you're going to a nightclub and you're getting kicked out by the bouncer, you're not going to run into someone who is like the maniac in the first... Maniac.
Yeah.
This guy's much more down to earth than, you know, could be the guy next door. So very frightening from that perspective. And now Frank Calhoun, so again, this is a thumbs up, and I definitely recommend you going to see it. It's playing exclusively at the Film Bar. Highly, highly recommend seeing this film. My pick of the week, you know, so far. We've got some more movies coming out on tomorrow that we'll talk about on Saturday, which we'll preview in a moment. But before that, the theme for this movie, and I'm stealing this directly from Frank Calhoun.
Oh.
I asked him what the theme is, what's the deeper meaning, and he says
be kind to one another. For if you are not, and I'm paraphrasing here, for if you are not, it is possible that someone with whom you come in contact will be deprived of the love that is necessary to go through life in a positive way, and they may end up hurting others, not out of malice, but out of personal pain. So, for example, this character in this movie, he's not doing this because he is an angry, hurtful individual. He's doing this because he hurts inside, and you get to see part of that because you're seeing it from his first-hand perspective.
Wow.
So, Dave, what do you think about that?
Well, malice, it's defined as a desire to inflict injury, harm, or suffering on another, either because of a hostile impulse or out of deep-seated meanness. But the question is can personal pain turn into malice? Malice. I almost said malice.
Malnutrition.
What is malice? Malice. So the question is, if someone has enough personal pain, often there's a concept called misery loves company, meaning people do not want, if you're suffering, people also think that, hey, if I'm suffering, you got to suffer.
Yeah.
Is that really personal pain turned into malice then? Because by definition, you're impressed that I was ready for this, desire to inflict injury or harm. We've all known people, we've all known people that have such anger issues that they inflict pain on people, but it's really because they don't feel loved. And that's sort of the theme. And if you don't feel loved and you feel that you don't like yourself, you beat up on yourself, you're angry at yourself, you don't think you're worthy, low self-esteem, and you have all this anger, you don't want other people to be happy sometimes. And that's why that could be a problem.
And that is malice. I would agree with that.
Yeah, so I think it can be interchangeable at times, depending, because there's a lot of people with personal pain that will get over it without hurting others. They'll isolate it. They'll say, okay, it's pain. I'll go through it. I'll transform. Other people can't seem to jump out of the personal pain. They think the world's after them. They're angry at the world. And if you're angry at the world and you don't like yourself, you're going to make other people miserable.
Well, see, Dave, I want you to see this movie, and
right?
I think it might be very difficult.
So.
Yeah, I agree as well. But I think
I might see this from the NLP psychological perspective.
Absolutely, because and I think that you'll get a new perspective.
Right.
You'll get a new perspective on this personal pain, because he's not doing it at all to hurt other people. He doesn't want to hurt other people at all. He is his.
Now, why does he do it? If he's killing people, why does he do it?
He wants to be close to them. That's why he's got all these mannequins around. And I don't want to share too much, spoil too much, but he's cutting off their hair and putting it on the mannequin so he can be with them forever.
Oh, he gets free hair for free mannequin. Lowers cost.
Yeah.
Smart. Again, a value issue.
Yeah.
You'll kill someone and I'll reduce my cost.
And he's got
sounds like corporate America. Oh, boy.
And he's got these things going on in his head. You know, he's a very disturbed individual, and I believe in this film, it is not his fault. He did not get the help that he needed early on in life, and we get to see some of those early scenes. We get to see some of the
some flashbacks
scenes with his mother.
So that might make a difference. There's a concept in NLP called there's a positive intention behind every behavior. So that's what you're really talking about. His behavior, certainly, you look at it, killing people, very wrong,
yeah.
Very, very wrong. No one would agree with killing people is the right thing, and certainly when he just out randomly killing people. Now, the positive intention, what does he get from killing people? That's what you're talking about.
Yes. He's
so what does he get? That's a positive intention. Not right. Every
right.
listener out there, it's very wrong to kill people. But what's his positive intention behind?
Just to let you know, by the way.
What's the positive intention behind that behavior? Behind the behavior, killing people, what's his positive intention? What is he trying to get?
He wants a relationship.
See, there it is. And the positive intention is good, but you don't get a relationship through killing people.
No,
change the behavior, keep the positive intention,
but
you'll have a good life.
But if he never learned how to have a positive
intention.
Okay,
and that makes sense. This is a great discussion.
Yes.
I think I'll see it, and we're going to look at this.
I can't wait to have another.
Yeah, because this
back and forth with you.
This happens so often in life, not the murder stuff, but so many people are angry.
It does, yeah.
Well, it does, but so many people are angry to the level they will hurt people and hurt them, and they'll make up lies and stuff.
And again, he's not angry.
Part.
He is not angry.
Right? I mean, I hate that part.
Yeah, I do too.
I want to clarify that he's not angry, though. He is hurting. He is very disturbed in his head. Okay, here's something. I'm sure that you saw Psycho. Norman Bates.
With the banana stabbing? Oh, that was the takeoff of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was killing someone in the shower.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite TV shows right now is
Jody Arias?
No.
Oh, that's a different psycho.
That's a different psycho, yes. She didn't have the equipment. But anyway, Vince Vaughn.
Yes.
Leap this out. But anyway, no, the Psycho, Bates Motel is one of my favorite.
Alfred Hitchcock.
One of my favorite TV shows on right now is Bates Motel. And it shows
uh-huh.
you the relationship between Norman Bates and his mother, Norma Bates. And, you know,
oh.
is it really Norman's fault later on in life
oh.
when his mother kind of did these things to him and kind of like disturbed him mentally and is it really
nice
his
question.
Fault?
Yeah.
I've wanted to watch it. I didn't see it. Now they already have the first season, right?
Yes.
They, okay.
The second season will premiere I think this fall.
Oh, okay.
Oh really?
So yeah, a prequel to the whole
yes,
Psycho
prequel.
Movie.
Oh, that's
yeah.
good then.
He's played by Freddie Highmore, and so it's very much in the same kind of theme. It's that
gotcha.
You know, we all know Psycho. We all know that story
right.
that you know he was in this motel and he had his. Well, I won't spoil the end, but
right.
his mother, and so he didn't do this out of anger. Well, maybe that character.
I think
kind
he
of
did.
That character did do it out of anger as well. But this character in Maniac, he doesn't do it out of anger. He wants a relationship. He doesn't know how to have a relationship. And
interesting.
I think you have a lot of empathy for this character because you see it straight through his eyes in Maniac. I highly suggest that you go see Maniac. Our listeners and you, Dave, it is
I will
a big
watch
thumbs
it.
Up.
No,
nice.
I'm just upset that people used to mistake me for Macaulay Culkin.
Just because they left you home alone?
Elijah Wood, Macaulay Culkin, you know.
Yeah, the other.
You will not
the
see
the other. I mean, the good son.
Yeah.
You will not see Elijah Wood the same way ever again.
Wow.
Hey.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to check that out. How about you, Greg?
To be honest, basically every movie you talked about today it sounds extremely interesting. I mean,
yeah.
You could say, well, you say that every time, but.
No, it doesn't.
From everything, you know, the dancing, obviously.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Trash Dance
yeah,
in a couple weeks.
Right,
yeah.
right. And that's why I brought it up first, because I know we can't have the review, but, you know, that
we can talk about Dirty Dancing, though.
Yeah, but right, exactly. But we'll stay away from that. The Maniac sounds great, of course. 100 Bloody Acres.
Also
just,
thumbs up.
Exactly. When you have the comedic element with the horror, it's fantastic. And then, of course... Bartending, even though
Hey Bartender,
maybe thumbs down, it's still...
From my perspective.
Right, but
I
still,
think I'd like
but you're still encouraging
yeah.
people to see, because
yeah.
you know
that was very,
a lot of folks
on
would
that.
Like
hey,
that.
That's a nice credit to you.
It seems good to me, you know, the type that I'd like to check out.
And they might be having some specials for Hey Bartender at the Film Bar, so you might want to check that out.
Oh,
you know,
oh really?
Yeah.
And then Dirty Wars,
yeah,
the
Dirty
whole
Wars.
War situation.
Oh, I want to see that too.
Yeah, so
absolutely.
Four great films that we talked about today, and then also Trash Dance. So we will talk more about that in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, on Saturday, we will review The Heat, that
yes.
movie with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, that looks funny.
Yeah, and we will also review White House Down with Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx.
That looks good. Yes.
And Unfinished Song with Terrence Stamp. And independent film. I'll tell you more
see,
about it on Saturday.
Terrence
Stamp. Approval.
A male or a female?
Terrence, he was General Zod in the original Superman.
Oh, he's a male. Terrence Stamp.
Terrence Stamp.
Stamp
yes.
male.
Ah.
Okay, you get it? Male.
And Gemma Arterton's in that movie as well.
So you got some good movies to review.
Maybe. They're big, high-profile movies. So
we like high-profile movies.
And Unfinished Song was awarded the Phoenix Film Critics Society's Film of the Week, because you know I am a member of that of the Phoenix Film Club.
That's right.
And they got that. It's Unfinished Song was awarded that.
Oh, that sounds good. A lot of action. Well, that wraps up the show. Joseph Erdo, how do they get in touch with you?
Go to BreakRadioShow.com or send me an email, joseph.erdo@gmail.com.
And this is great. This wraps it up. We'll see everyone Saturday, KPHX 1480 AM, this Saturday, 11-12. Have a good night.